Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, January 2nd, 2022. I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for January 2022, published January 6th. Tom Green County, as of January 6th, City of San Angelo. 28,846 positive cases reported. 428 new positive tests. Deaths, 482. 305 from Tom Green County and 177 from other counties. 25 currently hospitalized. 2,537 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker. Tom Green County has administered more than 130,373 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of January 4th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 1.26% from the previous week's tally of 128,746 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 46% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of January 4th. Three workers injured after scaffolding collapses at Ozona High School, by Melissa Perner from the Ozona Stockman, published January 6th. Scaffolding collapsed at the Ozona High School building project site Thursday morning, injuring three construction workers. Crockett County Consolidated Common School District Superintendent Raul Chavarria said no students or teachers were involved in the incident. The accident occurred around 10:30 a.m. Students and teachers were in class during the time of the accident and confined to their classrooms until the site could be secured. The scaffolding in the accident was facing State Highway 163, which is going to be the new academic building attached to the current OHS auditorium. The three men were bricklayers who were on a three-story scaffolding when it collapsed, Chavarria said. At this time, we do not know what caused the scaffolding to collapse. There is a safety team coming in from Dallas to investigate, so I am sure it will be a few days before we know anything. Our prayers go out to the men and their families. The medical status of the three workers was not immediately known. All three were transported to Shannon Medical Center by Crockett County EMS. Crockett County Fire Department, Crockett County Sheriff's Office, and Texas Department of Public Safety all responded. At the time of the accident, Crockett County EMS also had to respond to a medical call at Triple C Hardware in Lumber. Two ambulances took patients to Shannon Medical Center in San Angelo. A third ambulance met AirMed helicopter in Barnhart. Students at the high school said when the accident occurred, they heard a loud boom and then yelling. The construction of the new Ozona High School building started in 2021. The $39 million project involves a new academic building, ag shop, which was recently completed, auxiliary gym, and parking lot. It took 80 years and one phone call, but this World War II veteran and POW received his high school diploma. By John Tufts, published January 6th. Donald J. Huesnega was supposed to receive a diploma from Auburn High School, now East Sac High School in Lakeview, Iowa, in 1943. 3 months before he would have graduated, a different document found its way into Huesnega's hands, draft papers. An 18-year-old Huesnega traded both cap and gown for a khaki military uniform, missing graduation when he arrived for basic training in Des Moines, which followed months of U.S. Army Special Forces training at a base in Florida. It took 80 years and one phone call, but Huesnega was officially recognized as a high school graduate Wednesday, January 5th, during a special ceremony in San Angelo. Getting there wasn't easy. Veteran recalls artillery fire that injured him and led to his capture. Huizenga parachuted out of a plane 3 days before the Normandy invasion on June 6, 1944. Later, while doing reconnaissance work, he was injured by artillery fire that blew him back about 30 feet. Enemy troops found Huizenga propped against a fence. "All I had on me was a shredded shirt, shorts, and no shoes," Huizenga said, adding that he was hospitalized for 2 weeks, then transported by railroad to a German prisoner of war camp. Huizenga entered the POW camp weighing about 175 pounds. He survived 8 months as a prisoner of war before his release, when he left the camp 75 pounds lighter. Not getting a diploma, veteran's last regret. A social worker listened. After serving the U.S. Army from 1943 to 45, Huizenga returned to a normal life in the United States. He found work, got married, had children, and was blessed with several grandchildren. But something continued to tug at Huizenga, a regret the 98-year-old casually mentioned to Tess Gooding in San Angelo. "He was telling me about his time as a prisoner of war, at which point he mentioned that he had never graduated high school," said Gooding, a medical social worker at the San Angelo Veterans Affairs Clinic, 4240 Southwest Boulevard. Huizenga arrived in San Angelo in November 2021 to live closer to family. He needed hearing aids, prompting his visit with Gooding at the VA clinic. "And so I thought, you know, I'll just reach out to the high school back in Iowa. I'm originally from the area," she said. "Worst case scenario, they'll say no." On November 18, 2021, Gooding called the administrative office of East Sac High School and asked to speak with Principal Kevin Litterer, who recalled the moment. "I was in my office when my administrative assistant answered the phone. She jumped up and said, 'Kevin, you need to take this phone call right now,'" Litterer said. Litterer learned that despite Huizenga's accomplishments, the 98-year-old veteran regretted never going back to earn his high school diploma. Gooding asked if Litterer would be willing to do something for Huizenga. "My answer was absolutely yes," Litterer said. Officials at East Sac County School District in Iowa sprang into action, searching for old copies of Auburn High School diplomas, seals, and other graduation materials. Roughly 2.5 hours after his conversation with Gooding, Litterer had everything he needed, including a pilot who agreed to fly him to Texas. "East Sac County High School is made up of 4 small rural communities," Litterer said, saying the combined population was approximately 4,100 people. "These 4 rural communities are very close-knit. Rural Iowa community rallies to honor one of its own." 4 days after Gooding spoke to Litterer, trustees with the East Sac County School Board of Education met for their regularly scheduled meeting, in which they voted unanimously to name Donald J. Huizenga a graduate of Auburn High School. Word quickly spread in the rural Iowa community about Huizenga, whose members signed congratulatory cards and knitted the veteran a quilt of valor in his honor. Litterer flew down from Iowa to award Huizenga the diploma himself during a special ceremony Wednesday, January 5th, at the San Angelo Veterans Affairs Clinic. Speaking before an audience of family, friends, and well-wishers, Litterer asked Huizenga to come forward and accept his certificate. On behalf of the East Sac County Community School District, the East Sac County Board of Education, representing Auburn High School, the state of Iowa, and a grateful nation, it is my pleasure to inform you all that Donald J. Huizenga has met the requirements for graduation from Auburn High School, both in the classroom and on the battlefield, Litterer said, handing him his diploma. "You will be hereby recognized as a member of the graduating class of Auburn High School, class of 1943, Litterer said, as the audience in the packed Veterans Affairs lobby burst into applause. "I made it," Huizenga said, adding later that he was thrilled to pieces to be recognized as a high school graduate after 80 years. I always hoped that I would get a diploma, he said. I am pleased as punch. I am so pleased. I couldn't be any more pleased. Out of the roughly 16 million U.S. veterans who fought in World War II, approximately 240,000 remain alive as of September 2021, according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. That number is steadily declining, with about 234 estimated World War II veterans dying every day. It makes me remember, as a principal, what that piece of paper means, Litterer said. Donald reminds all of us that a diploma comes with hard work and effort, and it means something 80 years after the fact. He still wanted to get it. I think that's something I'm going to take back when I talk to my students. Maybe a student that doesn't think a high school diploma is important, he said. This is a conversation I could bring back to that student and say, yes, this is an important part of your life. Betty White donated for years to this Texas animal sanctuary. Meet her namesake, Baby Donkey, by Rosanna Frere, published January 6th. Television icon Betty White was famously known for being an animal supporter and advocate, and that love stretched to a donkey rescue in West Texas. After her death, the rescue wanted to honor her memory by naming their newest foal and nursery after the icon. White, who died peacefully in her sleep on December 31, 2021, had been a donor to Peaceful Valley Donkey Rescue since 2006, the country's largest sanctuary for abused and neglected donkeys, with more than 60 locations, is based in San Angelo, Texas. Mark Myers, executive director of the rescue, said when White started donating, her checks were under the name Betty White Ludden and came from her home. A lot of people said it could be any Betty White, but the checks came from her house under her name and then started coming from her management company, Myers said. It was the real deal, Betty White. Myers said she donated tens of thousands of dollars over the years to the rescue. She was a huge animal person all around the world, Myers said. We were on Animal Planet a few times, so maybe that's where she heard of us. Although she was a longtime supporter, White and Myers never had the opportunity to speak. Most donors don't want to be bothered and don't want their name out there, so they won't be harassed by other charities, Myers said. Philanthropy is very personal. They only support what they want to, so we try not to pester them. Legacy of Animal Advocacy Honored with Foal and Nursery. When the Jennet Donkey Foal was born on Christmas Day, December 25th, 2021, the Texas location struggled to find a name befitting the newest foal until December 31st. Betty White Ludden, Betty for short, was her given name in honor of the donor and icon. Not only was the new foal named after White, but the reconfigured nursery was also dedicated to her. We just finished the reconfiguration and made it so coyotes and dogs can't get into it. It's completely secure, Meyer said. The donkeys in there are older, special needs, and of course, the moms and babies. How to support this rescue in the Betty White Challenge. The rescue has been around for 21 years internationally and has 61 locations, with corporate headquarters in San Angelo. Myers and his nonprofit are stubbornly dedicated in giving donkeys a happy life. Just like Betty White, you can also support the Donkey Rescue as part of the Betty White Challenge, a fundraising effort circling the internet. The challenge, set for White's birthday on January 17th, will have people donating to charities for animals in her honor. Myers said the biggest way people can help is to give money, which can be found at his website's donation tab. That's at donkeyrescue.org/donate. Every one of those donkeys expect to eat every day, Myers said. They expect vaccines, deworming, hoofs trimmed, and their teeth checked, but it all costs money. Myers said his organization uses about 12,000 pounds of hay and 800 pounds of dry grass every day. Everything I have now takes a tremendous amount of money, Meyer said. Throw in the fact that we're catching wild burros in the desert. I have employees who live in the desert. I have workers' compensation, commercial vehicle insurance. It all adds up. Donations are critical for Myers, who won't accept money from the government. A statement on his website reads, "As long as I am the executive director of the Peaceful Valley Donkey Rescue, we will never accept government funding." Another way to help is to get to know the donkeys. If you think anything negative about a donkey, come out here and meet them. That's where it all starts, Meyer said. As soon as people come meet with them, they're on board. People are welcome to visit the San Angelo location at 8317 Duckworth Road. A tour can be set up by calling 866-366-5731. The rescue has upgraded their office, gift shop, and offers a shuttle bus tour, which has a wheelchair ramp. We'd like to reach out to some of the senior centers around town and have the older folks come out and be able to have access to the whole facility and see what we're doing, Meyer said. We're always improving things out here, getting bigger and better. The rescue is also working on a donkey history museum that is slated to open October 2023 in Mesquite, Nevada. Meyer said another way to help is to be an advocate for these animals that can't speak up for themselves. Donkeys have very few advocates, he said. Just be one for them. San Angelo expected to see freezing weather Thursday, highs in 70s by Saturday, by Elena Edgen, published January 5th. Another round of freezing temperatures is set to hit San Angelo on Thursday, but some good news will follow, according to the National Weather Service. The high for Thursday is expected to be around 40, with a low in the 20s. Wind chill could drop that into the single digits and teens, so people should find their warmest gear and prepare. Down here, wind chills will drop temperatures into the lower 20s, possibly teens, Thursday morning when the front comes through, said Adam Wiley, meteorologist. It will be a quick shot of Arctic air. People should take precautions for the freeze by protecting their pets, plants, and exposed pipes. The weather will warm up just in time for the weekend, with a high in the 60s for Friday and 70s on Saturday. By Sunday, another cold front will roll in, bringing the San Angelo area into the 50s. It's a roller coaster of temperatures, Wiley said. San Angelo's Fairmont Cemetery announces cleaning. Items must be picked up by January 7th, by Elena Edgen, published January 5th. Fairmont Cemetery will clean its burial grounds January 14th and ask people to collect any graveside items by Friday, January 7th, according to a City of San Angelo news release Wednesday. Any items not removed will be held until January 27th. Items that are not claimed will be disposed of starting January 28th. Items can be returned to the sites beginning January 28th. The release also reminded lot owners that flowers should be placed to the sides or in cradles on top of monuments, which allows for maintenance of grave sites. For more information, contact the cemetery at 325-655-9475. Central High School principal responds to social media bullying incidents, by Rosanna Frere, published January 4th. Parents of San Angelo ISD students were recently made aware of social media accounts bullying children. As the new year began, Central High School principal Bill Waters released a statement to parents informing them of Instagram sites created by Central students posting pictures of other students without their consent. He described the sites as negative, derogatory, cruel, and mean. These sites are negative to ethnicities, sexual orientation, students with special needs, and negatively target appearance, hair, skin, weight, and looks, Waters said in a statement. All of these sites fall into the category of cyberbullying and can result in both school and criminal consequences. It was difficult to identify the students who created the sites, Waters said, and Instagram was unwilling to remove them. I am asking parents and guardians to talk to your kids about the damage these sites can do, Waters said. Have a conversation about not supporting these sites, and if they are the creator of one of these sites, take it down. Waters also urged Central students to not support the sites. If you know someone that has one of these sites, talk to them about taking it down or tell a counselor or assistant principal. You will remain anonymous, the letter stated. We need to support each other and choose to be kind. You have no idea the headache you are causing. It is not funny. It's hurtful. You have no idea the shoes that someone walks in every day. Whitney Wood, SAISD's Executive Director of Communications, released a statement to the Standard Times regarding cyberbullying. San Angelo ISD and Central High School are committed to providing safe and supportive learning environments for all students. The internet can be a great tool for learning and connecting in an evolving digital world, but online safety and cyberbullying are now nationwide issues impacting schools and the social and emotional well-being of our children. One child facing cyberbullying is one too many. SAISD and CHS encourage our parents, guardians, and students to work together with us to be respectful digital citizens and stop online harassment in our community. Earlier this week, Principal Bill Waters addressed cyberbullying in a letter noting the critical role parents and guardians play in the lives of our students. SAISD will continue to do our part while also encouraging families to be informed about internet safety, to monitor your students' online activity, and to talk with your student about the appropriate use of social media. Activity rising to the level of cyberbullying and/or harassment may result in school disciplinary action in accordance with the SAISD Student Code of Conduct and/or criminal charges by law enforcement. SAISD, by law, is not at liberty to publicly disclose the names of students or disciplinary actions taken. We appreciate the continued partnership and support of our families and students. Together, let's build a respectful digital community and help our children to make good decisions in their online use. Details released on San Angelo man charged with impersonating a private investigator, by Elena Edgen, published January 4th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after two people paid him $5,000, believing he was a private investigator, according to court documents released Wednesday. Around December 21st, a man with a Mississippi driver's license received $5,000 from a woman who hired him as a private investigator for a person in Reagan County Jail, records state. The man contacted the Reagan County Sheriff's Office, stating he was a private investigator and needed to get into the jail to speak with a client. He also stated he worked with the person's attorney, according to court documents. The attorney told investigators the man had been hired by the client personally and not by their office. Later that day, he met with the jail administrator and showed a Mississippi license, but was unable to produce any investigator credentials, records state. A search of the Texas Online Private Security Database revealed he was not a licensed investigator. Law enforcement contacted the Texas Department of Public Safety, where private investigators are licensed. DPS confirmed he was not registered with them. On Sunday, January 2nd, the Reagan County Sheriff's Office posted on social media that the man was wanted and believed to be in San Angelo. Hours later, he was arrested and booked in Tom Green County Detention Center. John David Russell, 60, was arrested on suspicion of theft of property between $2,500 and $30,000 and two counts of impersonating a private investigator. He was released to another agency on Tuesday, according to online jail records. According to Tom Green County jail records, his aliases include Keith Hill, Mark Nelson, John O'Connor, Tommy Rustin, Michael Weston, and John Wilson. Impersonating a private investigator is a Class A misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in prison and a $4,000 fine. The theft charge is a state jail felony, which can be punishable by up to 10 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Fatal rollover crash outside Ozona claims life of San Antonio woman traveling I-10. By Rosanna Frere, published January 3rd. A San Antonio woman traveling in the passenger seat of a vehicle died after a New Year's Day rollover crash on Interstate 10, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. The single vehicle crash happened at 8:30 a.m. on January 1st, 2022 on I-10, about 5 miles east of Ozona. The preliminary investigation shows that the car, a 2014 Chevrolet Cruze towing a trailer, was traveling westbound when the driver failed to drive in a single lane, veering left toward the center median, a news release stated. The driver overcorrected the wheel to the right, traveling through both lanes towards the north side barrow ditch, the news release stated. Once inside the barrow ditch, the vehicle entered a side skid before rolling multiple times. The passenger, Victoria Bianca Garcia, was pronounced deceased by Dr. Kelly Koenig. Garcia, age 22, was not wearing her seatbelt, according to the news release. The driver of the Chevrolet Cruze, who was wearing a seatbelt, was transported to Shannon Medical Center for non-incapacitating injuries. Two San Angelo teenagers found safe in Mississippi after being missing for more than 2 weeks. By Rosanna Frere and John Tufts, published January 3rd. Two San Angelo area teenagers who went missing days before Christmas have been found safe in Mississippi. On Monday, January 3rd, the parents of Adelina Addie Ornelas, 15, and Jonathan Mayville, 16, received news their children were discovered hundreds of miles away after the pair disappeared from the San Angelo area on December 18th. Their families believed the two were together, as they had been talking to each other through social media. Both families had been working together to get their missing children home when they received the good news, their parents confirmed to the Standard Times. During an earlier interview with the Standard Times, Jonathan's mother, Priscilla Mayville, said there was little reason to believe her son would leave unexpectedly up to the night he went missing. "He came home from work and everything seemed just fine," Priscilla said. "He told me about his day and said he was going to take a shower and go to bed. There were no problems at all. No signs he was upset." Later that night, she awoke to take care of one of her other children and said she had a feeling to check on the others. Jonathan was not in his bed, which had been made. Nikki Bazan Gonzalez also couldn't think of a reason why her daughter, Addie, would leave. "She's never ran away before. She has no reason to," said Nikki Bazan Gonzalez, her mother. "This is very unlike her. We love her, we miss her, and we want her home," she said during an earlier interview. The families got their wish Monday morning. Both Mayville and Bazan Gonzalez made a social media post saying their children were found safe in Mississippi and arrangements were underway to bring them back to San Angelo. San Angelo's Bed Bath & Beyond closing. Here's what we know. By Rosanna Frere, published December 31st. San Angelo's Bed Bath & Beyond location is closing. Here's what we know. Customers received emails on December 30th with the subject line, "Your local store is closing, prices slashed." The email stated the location at 4169 Sunset Drive was closing. Sales are 20 to 40% off lowest ticketed prices and everything must go, according to the email. An associate said the store is slated to close on January 23rd. The chain sells a varied selection of home goods, including bedding, kitchenware, towels, and decor items, according to its website. Kirkland's in San Angelo closing within 1 month. Sales prices crowd the store. By Rosanna Frere, published December 31st. Around noon on Thursday, Kirkland's in San Angelo had a line to the back of the store of customers with loaded carts. an associate with Kirkland's, confirmed the store at 4205 Sunset Drive is closing for good. The final day of operations will be January 26th. On Thursday, December 30th, all items were 30% off and 75% off Christmas decorations. Abilene woman becomes final person to plead guilty in San Angelo Red Roof Inn murder by Elena Edgen, published December 30th. Over 2 years after a man was killed in San Angelo, the final person charged in his death has taken a plea deal. About 8:30 a.m., Wednesday, December 29th, Jennifer Badillo attended a plea hearing via Zoom in the 391st District Court. Badillo was initially one of three people charged with the murder of Gilberto Mascoro in July 2019. Badillo was able to avoid that charge and pleaded guilty to aggravated robbery. In exchange for her plea of guilt, state prosecutors suggested 10 years deferred adjudication, a type of probation that could help her avoid conviction if she follows the requirements issued by the court. She will have to pay $10,202.35 in restitution, and the murder charge will be dismissed. This is based on the minimal role of the defendant, Badillo, in the homicide, with consideration for cooperation with law enforcement and indications of remorse, said Allison Palmer, 51st District Attorney. 391st District Court Judge Brad Goodwin accepted the state's recommendation and sentenced to Badillo to those terms. What we know about Mascoro's death and Abilene arrests. About 1 p.m. July 7th, 2019, police arrived at the Red Roof Inn on South Bryant Boulevard for a reported shooting. They discovered Mascoro dead by gunshot. 2 days later, police in Abilene stopped a vehicle on North 6th and Fannin Street. Jesse Wayne Robinson, who had a parole violation warrant, was driving, and Badillo was a passenger. Robinson fled the vehicle and threw out a bag of methamphetamine. Badillo was arrested on unrelated charges in the stop, and both were later charged with murder. Daniel Diaz, who was months into a deferred adjudication sentence, returned to Tom Green County Detention Center on July 10th. A motion to revoke detailed he was with Robinson on July 7th, the same day as Mascoro's death. Diaz pleaded guilty in September 2021 on the murder charge and a motion to revoke the 2018 crash that killed a man and injured three others. He received 20 years for the murder charge and must pay $10,100 restitution. For the 2018 case, he received 10 years jail time for the evasion charge and must pay $69,673.31 in restitution. Robinson pleaded guilty to the murder charge on March 3, 2020, and received 40 years in jail. District Attorney Allison Palmer mentioned after Robinson's plea that these deals can be better for all sides. Plea deals are better for both sides of the case, and we can avoid the probability of a trial, Palmer said. It also brings peace to the crime victim side, so they don't have to go through all of that either. Man charged in UPS crash, bomb threat near San Angelo, incompetent for trial, judge says. By Elena Edgen, published December 30th. Months after a UPS truck was hit and a bomb threat shut down part of U.S. Highway 67 near San Angelo, a judge has deemed the defendant incompetent for trial. About 11:30 a.m., Wednesday, December 29th, Richard Taylor Hill, 55, of San Antonio, attended a competency hearing through Zoom in the 340th District Court. He has been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after deliberately crashing into a UPS truck and telling deputies he had a bomb on July 29, 2021. Hill was examined in November by a doctor who believed he was incompetent to stand trial at this time. 340th District Judge Jay Weatherby agreed with the doctor's report. Weatherby then signed Hill over to a Big Spring hospital. A new court date for reexamination has not been set as of 11:45 a.m. Wednesday. Bomb threat and UPS truck crash near San Angelo ends in arrest. About 10:07 a.m. on July 29th, 2021, dispatch received a call involving a crash on Highway 67 north of San Angelo. The caller reported a black SUV drove south in the northbound lane and struck a UPS truck head-on, according to an arrest affidavit. The truck rolled multiple times, resulting in the 38-year-old driver's hands and chest to be injured. When deputies found Hill with the 1998 Dodge Durango SUV, he said he had a bomb and was attempting to make it detonate, records state. This prompted a request for the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Detachment from Dyess Air Force Base and the Abilene Police Department Bomb Squad to respond. No explosives were found, and the highway reopened around 3:46 p.m. Hill told investigators he intentionally steered the Dodge SUV into the UPS truck after looking for a large vehicle or 18-wheeler to drive into, according to court documents. He was arrested later that day on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. In August, he was indicted on the same charge, which enhanced to a first-degree felony. This is punishable by 5 to 99 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. It was enhanced due to a forgery conviction from Harris County in 1987. Woman stabbed multiple times after ending relationship with San Angelo man. One arrested. By Elena Edgen, published December 30th. One witness heard someone gasping for air, then found a woman drenched in blood in San Angelo on Sunday. 2 days later, a man turned himself in to police in connection to the case, according to court documents. On Sunday, December 26th, police arrived to a reported stabbing victim in the 600 block of West 16th Street. An officer found a woman covered in blood who had several stab wounds. The officer applied a tourniquet to her arm due to a slash on her left wrist, bleeding profusely, records state. Investigators found a large pool of blood on the pavement, along with blood droplets in and around a vehicle, according to an arrest affidavit. The woman was taken to the hospital, where she later told investigators a man stabbed her because she ended their relationship, records state. Witnesses inside a nearby residence told officers the man entered the home with blood on his arm. When a witness asked if he was okay, the man said no. The man left the residence and police were unable to locate him, according to court documents. One witness described hearing someone gasping for air and went outside, where they found the woman drenched in blood. The same witness later located a knife in the residence, which contained possible blood, according to the affidavit. Rashad Ian Carter, 32, turned himself into police custody and was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon Tuesday. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $75,000 bond as of 9:15 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Country band Sawyer Brown and Idol contestant Gabby Barrett to headline Rehab 2022. By Greg Jake Lewitz, Abilene Reporter News, published December 28th. The country band Sawyer Brown and rising star Gabby Barrett, along with Texas country singer Ariel Hutchins, will join favorites such as Red Steagall on January 22nd for Rehab 2022. The five-hour telethon benefits three locations of the West Texas Rehabilitation Center. It airs from 7 p.m. to midnight, live from the Abilene Convention Center. The show will stream live at westtexasrehab.org. Last year's event, co-headlined by Neil McCoy and the country group Runaway June, raised $1.46 million. That was just shy of the record $1.54 million taken in during the 50th anniversary telethon and auction in 2019. The 2020 success made it 26 straight years of raising at least $1 million. The event also features an online auction. An auction live show will air from 5:30 to 7 that evening on KRBC, Abilene, and KSAN KSAN San Angelo. The online auction already is open, with bids accepted through midnight January 22nd. Items are on display beginning at 6 that evening, also at the Convention Center. Charlie Chase of Crook and Chase, music talk show fame, again will be the host. Stage interviews will be conducted by retired TV newsperson Braid Blanks and ESPN rodeo reporter Jennifer Douglas Smith. Actor Brad Mull returns too. Sawyer Brown was formed in 1981 and scored with such hits as Some Girls Do, Betty's Being Bad, The Boys and Me, The Walk, The Dirt Road, Thank God for You, The Race is On, and 6 Days on the Road. The band performed at the Telethon in 2016. Barrett finished third on the 16th season of American Idol. Her debut single, I Hope, was a song that hit the top 10 and was the first by an unaccompanied female artist since October 2017. Magnitude 4.5 earthquake hits near Stanton, shaking other West Texas cities Monday night, by Rosanna Frere, published December 28th. Texas has been experiencing an unusual week after breaking heat records over Christmas and an upcoming cold front. Things shook up even more on Monday night. An earthquake struck just over 11 miles outside of Stanton, about 20 miles northeast of Midland, at 7:55 p.m. on Monday, December 22nd, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The quake had a 4.5 on the moment magnitude scale, with a 7.2 kilometer depth. This could be felt across Texas and New Mexico, including San Angelo and Abilene. The USGS took reports from hundreds of area residents claiming to have felt the quake. The shaking, damage, and intensity were in the weak to very light levels. The earthquake is tied for the second strongest in West Texas during the last decade, according to EarthquakeTrack.com, topped only by a 5.0 magnitude quake near Mentone on March 26, 2020. While this earthquake did not cause major damage, it is part of a growing trend around the Permian Basin. On December 23rd, the Texas Railroad Commission, which oversees the oil and gas industry, ordered an end to deep well disposal of contaminated water that's brought to the surface during drilling for oil and gas. Inspectors and geologists have been inspecting disposal activity and constantly monitoring seismic data, the Railroad Commission said in a statement December 20th. RRC staff have monitored approximately 30 earthquakes with the magnitude greater than 3.0 in the Midland-Odessa area since December 2019. The agency stated the deep injections are likely contributing to recent seismic activity in the region. The order goes into effect Friday, December 31st, for 4 counties near Midland-Odessa, which could cause a drilling slowdown for the oil-rich Permian Basin. Operators in the area, once the halt goes into effect, can either plug their deep disposal wells to an acceptable level or drill new, shallower wells. Another option would be transporting the contaminated water to a different location for disposal. San Angelo chapter of NAACP celebrates 75th anniversary, by Jay Moreno, published December 27th. The San Angelo chapter of the NAACP recently held an event for its 75th anniversary, recognizing longtime members for the organization's efforts for equality. The anniversary event, held December 17th at the Cactus Hotel, honored past presidents and key figures of the organization, which NAACP Unit 6219, President Shirley Spears, referred to as Living Legends. Jazz musician Kevin Brown provided musical entertainment, while local Congressman August Pfluger and Houston Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee also attended, the latter of which gave a speech referencing the 1964 novel Why We Can't Wait by Martin Luther King. In addition, the local chapter also registered new members at the event. It's very important to work with an organization that is always putting forth measures, programs, and things of that nature to help serve oppressed people such as the African American and the brown community, Spears said. The NAACP San Angelo chapter dates back to 1946 when it was started by L.A. Rabin, a local resident and businessman who served as its president until the late 1960s. Spears has been involved with the organization since childhood. Since its very inception, the mission of the NAACP has been to make sure that African Americans in particular have a fair and equitable chance at having a quality life as an American citizen, Spears said. Despite the common misconception that NAACP is only for African Americans, people of other ethnic groups are welcome to join the organization, as they accept anyone who advocates for standing up to injustice, fighting back against systemic racism, and answering the call for quality, according to their website. The organization also provides support for other racial minorities and the LGBTQ+ community. We would not be representing what our mission is if we were to turn around and be oppressors of those same groups, such as when we experienced oppression greatly, Spears said. We continue to fight for democracy, freedom, equality, and social justice for everyone. Downtown San Angelo Library, back to normal, mostly, after a car crash forces children's area to move. By John Tufts, published December 23rd. A small burst of laughter, followed by the sound of a parent shushing their child, could be heard Tuesday deep within the basement of the Stevens Central Library, 33 West Beauregard Avenue, where the children's department has been moved to its new temporary home. Prior to a November incident where a car crashed partially through a library window, the noise would have been dampened by the thick carpet and fabric-lined walls decorated with stars and animal shapes. But inside the 2,500-square-foot basement, footsteps clattered lightly on drab concrete floors as murmured voices echoed from the tall ceiling. If the extra noise bothered Jill Donegan at all, she didn't show it. Donegan, director of the Tom Green County Library System, beamed as young readers strolled between rows of library shelves stacked with children's books. An 8-year-old girl named Emily walked by with her grandmother, excited to pick out stories she wanted to read over the holiday break. We are back to normal in terms of hours of service and programming and access to the collection and staff assistance and all of those things that existed in the original location, Donegan said Tuesday, December 21st. People might think the children's department is closed because of the accident, but I think we've made it work pretty well, she said, adding staff jumped right in, setting up a new area for children after the regular space was rendered unusable. How Stevens Central Library recovered from a car crashing through the window. During the late hours of November 17th, a white Tesla model vehicle could be seen dangling halfway through a glass pane of the library, a result of a late-night assault in which a man used his vehicle to ram the Tesla off the road, a news release stated. The incident is still under investigation by the San Angelo Police Department. Library staff said they were grateful the children's department was unoccupied at the time of the crash. Shards of glass rained down onto bookshelves on top of stuffed animals and coated the carpet where toddlers often played. I just couldn't believe that there was glass everywhere. It was a real shock, said Rob Honegger, children's librarian, saying he was dumbfounded after arriving for work that morning. The library's fiberglass sheep statue, affectionately known as Page Turner, was also destroyed. Donegan said a conservative estimate of the damage exceeded $350,000, a figure she suspected would grow as officials continue sorting through repairs. Both Honegger and Donegan said library staff rallied to move approximately 25,000 books and other items further into the basement, creating a new children's area behind the STEAM, Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Mathematics, Central Makerspace. Honegger said librarians and staff were able to accomplish the move in about a week. Staff reports 90% of library's picture book collection had to be shipped out for cleaning. We started disassembling the shelves and actually used furniture rollers. We took all the books off, put them on trolleys and trucks, and slid the shelves in here, saving us an immeasurable amount of time, Honegger said. Everybody pitched in. to ensure there were no shards of glass left in any books meant for the library's youngest readers. Honegan said 18,000 picture books, about 90% of the library's picture book collection, had to be shipped out for inspection. While there appeared to be plenty of books available for children to read and check out Tuesday, Honegger said about half the juvenile fiction section was also out for cleaning. The glass affected aisles of books. We had a team of approximately 6 to 8 people, a professional cleaning service, who boxed everything up and sent it off for cleaning. It will probably be about 3 months before those books come back to us, Honegger said. Honegger said it might take up to 6 months before the children's department can be moved back into its original space. Until then, he's glad the library can continue its mission of putting books into the hands of any child who wants to read. We are open, Honegger said. People can come down and have the same experience. Even with a fraction of our collection, these books still have the same value. A silver lining, San Angelo Library's STEAM makerspace area getting more attention. Staff also seem to have found a silver lining after moving the children's department closer to the library's STEAM makerspace. On that Tuesday, children perusing the bookshelves saw an area set up to create holiday decorations. Spread out across a white fold-out table were dozens of fuzzy green and red pipe cleaners, bright beads, and shiny bells, as well as instructions children could follow to make a Christmas tree ornament. Several children had set their library books down and sat at the table, carefully folding the green pipe cleaners into the shape of a fir tree. They added beads and bells for the ornaments and looped bright string at the top. Casey Dees, maker librarian, said he's been seeing many new faces in his department of late who had never heard about STEAM or what the makerspace had to offer. A lot of people have been curious about the equipment, Dee said. I've been giving tours to show them all of what we have. Being near Christmas, children want to print cool things on our 3D printer. We had an ornament-making workshop on Saturday, and that was actually very, very well attended. Dee said children who walked in with their parents to check out books would often interact with the makerspace as well, which had STEAM-based toys, engineering, building blocks, Legos, and kid-friendly robotics. Technology and coding workshops are also available with access to poster printers children can use for a small fee to make their drawings into poster-sized art. It's been really great to see all the wonderful new faces, all the families, all the curious people coming in to check out STEAM, as well as the children's area, Dee said. And now here is the week's column by Allison Watkins. Tips for helping plants thrive inside the home. Special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published December 30th. Research shows that plants can help with mental and physical health, not just outside in landscapes, gardens, and parks, but inside the home as well. Houseplants can help reduce stress and improve mental well-being. Choose plants that are adapted to low light levels. Selection and care are quite different for plants that stay inside the home than our typical landscape plants. Two major factors to focus on with houseplants are light and water. Plants that are known to be good for inside a building are generally tropical plants native to areas with very dense canopies that can handle lower light levels. But all plants need some light to grow. And even houseplants need more light than is usually available in the home to grow well and thrive. A simple test to measure light levels and to help choose the best spot for houseplants can be done by holding a hand about 12 inches above the surface in question, floor, table, etc., during the brightest time of day. Look for the hand shadow. If it is a clear and distinct dark shadow, that is a high light level. If it has a fuzzy outline and is a light, faint shadow, that is low light. Place plants in the brightest light in order to have the most vigorous growth. Plants may survive in low light, but most won't have active growth or reach their potential. Watering houseplants can be tricky. Many plants do best when they can be watered thoroughly and the excess water is allowed to drain away well. But houseplants tend to be watered lightly and more frequently, and there is usually a tray underneath to catch the excess water, which can create standing water for long periods of time. If possible, place houseplants in a sink or tub, water thoroughly, and allow to drain well before returning. However, many houseplants can handle being watered where they stand, with the tray beneath, as long as they aren't overwatered, allowing the potting soil to dry out a bit before watering again. Some of the toughest houseplants that work well in most homes include Christmas cactus, philodendron, ficus, pothos ivy, sansevieria, ZZ plant, dracaena, and aglaonema. If you're interested in learning more about landscaping and gardening in the Concho Valley and would like to connect with other gardeners, join us for the annual Concho Valley Master Gardening Training Course and get involved in the community by volunteering for educational projects. The training class will be held Tuesday evenings in February through May, and the cost for the whole course is $225. For more details, visit https://txmg.org/Concho Valley, or contact the extension office by calling 325-659-6528.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.